Greetings, and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2015 third quarter earnings results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Scott Wolchko, President and Chief Executive Officer. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. Our third quarter 2015 results were highlighted by bottom-line improvements on a year-over-year basis, continued premium growth in our markets, increased overall market share, continued successful integration of our acquisition of Global Liberty, and a number of other operational achievements positioning us for future success. We also continue to see market trends in both broader commercial auto and our niche segment that are encouraging for a continuation of favorable pricing and growth in the coming year. During today's call, we'll discuss these operating results and how we intend to deliver consistent returns and return on equity in our target levels of 500-1,000 basis points above the P&C industry. Based on statutory filings, P&C industry produced an approximate 9.5% pre-tax ROE in the past year. While we're already generating a return that is approximately 1,000 basis points higher than this, our expectation is that in the near term, we can improve on this result through continued margin expansion and responsible but increased operating leverage. I'll now turn it over to Paul to provide details about our quarterly materials and review our policy regarding forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its 2015 third quarter financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the Risk Factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2014. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. We will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the Earnings Release Info selection. For those of you following along with our presentation, we'll begin on slide four. With that, I'd now like to turn the call back over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. We're in a cyclical business, and our strategy is designed to leverage each point in the market cycle. At this time, we're seeing a very favorable pricing environment and are taking full advantage of the opportunity to grow while continuing to expand margins on a year-over-year basis at the same time. We've put capital planning tools in place to self-fund this growth in a managed and responsible way. We're also investing in people and technology to ensure that we can support this growth and continue to deliver our strong value proposition to policyholders and distribution partners. While reinvesting in our business can create short-term drag on expense ratio improvement in any given quarter, it is critical to the long-term health and profitability of our organization. That said, we're also cognizant of the importance of achieving run rate objectives in terms of efficiency. In addition, we've been proactive about positioning Atlas in advance of an evolving public auto market, about which I'll go into greater detail towards the end of the call. In the third quarter, we delivered margin improvement as compared to the same quarter last year due to pricing activity. Our expense ratio, excluding debt treatment and equity incentive-related costs, was also near target levels. While our goal continues to be to drive the expense ratio into the 24.5%-26.5% range through scale and operating efficiency, it's also important that we invest in the infrastructure necessary to continue to deliver sustainable growth in these current favorable market conditions. After the acquisition of Global Liberty earlier this year, our entire team has been focused on vertical expansion, and we're winning market share in just about every state in which we're writing, but are still not greater than 10% in any one state. Given our noted goals of achieving a proportionate 20% market share in the current market environment, there's still quite a bit of runway. On slide 5, we show our growth in terms of key metrics during the period. Including Global Liberty, our gross premiums written improved by 55.3% to $65.3 million, the highest quarterly total in Atlas's history. Premiums written for our core market of smaller commercial auto operators improved 57.8%. The third quarter for Atlas is seasonally different than other quarters as a result of our excess taxi program in New York. This is a business arrangement providing excess coverage above the levels of risk retained by the insured, and only a small number of large medallion owners qualify for this program. As a result, we do not expect the premium volume related to the program to vary significantly year over year. Last year, gross premium written in the third quarter attributable to this program was approximately $12 million. As expected, this year it was relatively the same. Excluding this program and the premium from Global Liberty, gross written premiums grew 44%. It's also worth noting that at this time, our exposure to yellow cab business in New York City is limited to this excess taxi program. Based on current rate levels, we're not writing a material amount of first dollar taxi business in the city. We also achieved underwriting improvement during the period. Our combined ratio continued to trend lower on a year-over-year basis. In fact, as seen on slide 6, our quarterly combined ratio has improved as compared to the year prior year same quarter consistently for the past 3 years. In the most recent quarter, this led to operating income improving 66.9% to $6.2 million, or 46 cents per diluted common share, for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015. Despite the fact that our GAAP results reflect the full U.S. tax rate this year, net income for the quarter still rose 15.2% on a year-over-year basis to $4 million, or 32 cents per diluted common share. Tax affecting last year's net income on a pro forma basis, this quarter's 32 cents per share compares to 19 cents per share for the same period in 2014. Book value per diluted common share for Atlas at September 30, 2015 is $9.88, a 19.9% increase from $8.24 at September 30, 2014. We're also very pleased with our year-over-year improvements in the loss ratio. As I stated in last quarter's conference call, while this ratio can move up or down in any given quarter based on business mix and actual loss activity, it should generally continue to trend towards pricing targets, barring unexpected, extraordinary losses. Each of Atlas's operating subsidiaries are writing new and renewal business to below 60% loss ratio, which we expect to continue delivering underwriting margin improvement in the future. Beginning last quarter, we began providing information about our in-force premium. As you can see on slide 7, this figure continues to grow in a meaningful way. It's the best measure of our run rate revenue, including the in-force premium that Global Liberty generated prior to being reflected in Atlas's numbers. This graph also demonstrates that our growth has accelerated in a relatively consistent manner, which is the result of our managed process and efficient distribution channel. On slide 8, premium by state is summarized. We're achieving growth through the steady building of market share among a wider geographic base. Our goal is to continue to increase market penetration in each geographic area in which we distribute our specialty products. We're also increasingly focusing on expanding brand awareness among the increasing number of owner-operators who are being dispatched via mobile apps. With the acquisition of Global Liberty, premiums in New York are significant as a percentage of the total, even excluding the effect of our excess taxi program. In addition, our growth in markets such as California and Colorado has continued to remain well in excess of 100%. In fact, we experienced growth over 100% in 11 states in the quarter. Our business model is hyper-focused, and as such, being close to the consumer is critical. We distribute our products only through specialized independent agents. They're specific to our niche, understand Atlas's value proposition, and are able to communicate it to policyholders. As you can see from our hit ratio and application submission data shown on slide 9, this channel is doing an effective job. In addition, as seen on slide 10, vehicles represented on new business applications continue to come in at a rate that's even higher than last year. In addition, our renewal retention is at target levels. We've been able to successfully increase rate while maintaining high retention and strong new business submissions. Although there was a slight drop in the third quarter as a result of some geographically specific changes, we expect retention rates to return to above target levels prior to year end. We also lean on our agency network for their insights in terms of customer needs and priorities. It's a give and take. As we grow our business, it's critical that we not compromise our value proposition. While growing pains are inevitable at some level anytime revenue is increasing nearly 50%, our commitment is to ensure that these challenges are addressed quickly and with long-term customer-centric solutions. A good example of this is the rollout of our point-of-sale policy system, which began in the third quarter. Development of this interface began almost 2 years ago, incorporating feedback from our business partners, and we're now at a point where our agents, and ultimately our expense ratio, will start to benefit from its deployment. We always want to continue to improve from a quality and operating efficiency standpoint. To this end, we actively seek input from our agents and are committed to using this information to guide our planning. Our frequent communication with agents and policyholders on a day-to-day basis, as well as at industry and Atlas-specific working groups, also ensures that we're able to quickly learn about changes in the marketplace. At this point, we continue to hear that the market remains firm and have not seen any credible signs of disruptive new entrants. Discussions with our agents have helped our company be proactive in connection with industry trends. For example, this has helped Atlas properly evaluate opportunities related to drivers under dispatch with transportation network companies. We're also actively researching and coordinating with agents and policyholders to evaluate the impact of telematics and accident prevention technologies in vehicles. We believe that these high-touch relationships are difficult to replicate and only possible as a result of Atlas's hyper-focused model. On slide 11, we've included an analysis of our net written premiums to statutory surplus. At September 30, 2015, our operating leverage is measured by net written premium to surplus remained at approximately 1.5 to 1, similar to the previous quarter. This ratio remained relatively flat as our retained statutory earnings grew by approximately the same percentage as net premium growth. We regard being a good steward of capital as a critical element of our business. Of course, our planning process must contemplate regulatory and rating agency constraints as well. In the third quarter, we were pleased that AM Best affirmed the pre-Global Liberty acquisition ratings of all of our subsidiary insurance companies. As communicated previously, our upward bounds for the company's operating ratio is 2 to 1, and we do expect our leverage to move up in this range during the upcoming year. With the objective of self-funding growth in mind, we will ensure that our operating leverage is properly maintained to support our growth. We know that managing volume, operating margin, and financial leverage should result in the maximizing of return on common equity and long-term value creation for shareholders. Self-funded growth is a priority, and tools such as our quota share reinsurance program and credit facility provide important flexibility in this regard. Based on recent discussions with a number of reinsurers, we anticipate favorable reinsurance rates to continue into next year. The company's quota share agreement provides both a ceding commission to offset both acquisition costs and other underwriting expenses. However, from an accounting perspective, the ceding commission only reduces acquisition costs in our financial statement and does not offset other underwriting expenses on the P&L. With this in mind, and as mentioned on our last earnings call, our overall expense ratio, which is the combination of acquisition costs and other underwriting expenses, should be looked at collectively to measure operating efficiency. We will also continue to provide pro forma pre-quota share underwriting expense ratios in our financial release information for transparency purposes. We continue to keep a total expense ratio target of between 24.5% and 26.5% before interest expense and share-based compensation and expect to progress to this level. This incorporates a pre-quota share expected gross other underwriting expense ratio in the 10 to 12% range and acquisition costs remaining constant around 14.5% on an annualized basis. Although we were slightly higher than this target in the third quarter due primarily to the timing of expenses and incremental hiring, on a full-year basis, we expect meaningful improvement over the prior full year and are comfortable with the target for future quarters, especially in consideration of the efficiency anticipated as we roll out and consolidate business onto our newly released policy issuance system from multiple legacy systems. With that, I will once again turn the call over to Paul for a more detailed review of our financial results, and then I'll return for concluding remarks.
Thanks, Scott. Our financial overview in the presentation begins on slide 13. Here, we provide a number of our financial highlights for the third quarter, and welcome each of you to review our press release and filings should you want more detailed information. Gross premium written increased 55.3% to $65.3 million in the period, compared to $42 million in the three-month period ended September 30, 2014. We primarily target owner-operators and small fleets with taxi, limousine, and paratransit segments. Our gross written premium from these target accounts increased 57.8% in the third quarter 2015 as compared to the third quarter of 2014. Global Liberty accounted for $11 million of this increase to gross written premium in the quarter. In the third quarter, we ceded 15% of our premiums under our quota share reinsurance program for American Country, American Service, and Gateway. Global Liberty is under a separate quota share reinsurance program that is in place other than the other three subsidiaries. Global Liberty's cession rate was 20% of their subject written premium for the quarter. We do not anticipate making any changes to these cession rates during the remainder of 2015. Net written premium was $52 million for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015, or an increase of 37.6% as compared to the same period of 2014. Global Liberty accounted for $7.8 million of the increase to net premiums written. Managing our operating leverage by proactively utilizing quota share reinsurance is a key element of our self-funding strategy, which is to continue benefiting from organic growth within our niche during a favorable market environment. All reinsurance programs are under review with the objective of leveraging our operating scale to obtain the best possible terms for 2016. Net premium earned increased by 62.9% in the three-month period ended September 30, 2015 to $41.7 million. The Global Liberty net premium earned accounted for $8 million of this increase. The remaining increase in net premiums earned resulted from organic growth primarily in states of California, Louisiana, Minnesota, Oregon, and Washington. Excluding the impact of Global Liberty's incremental premium, organic growth in the third quarter of 2015 was 29% from the prior year quarter. Further excluding our New York excess taxi program, which is not expected to vary considerably in size year over year, organic growth was 44%. On the expense side, the overall loss ratio for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015 improved to 60% from 62.2% in the three-month period ended September 30, 2014. The loss ratio improvement in 2015 as compared to 2014 is primarily a result of pricing activity related to our core lines. We continue to see opportunities to be a price leader. Underwriting expense is comprised of acquisition costs, which are agent commission expenses net of quota share reinsurance ceding commissions, plus underwriting expenses. Excluding the impact from debt service and share-based compensation expenses, the underwriting expense ratio was 27.2% in the three-month period ended September 30, 2015, compared to 26.2% in the prior year quarter. On a pre-quota share basis, and before the impacts from debt service and share-based compensation expenses, the components of the underwriting expense ratio for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015 were 14.9% for the acquisition cost ratio and 13.2% for the other underwriting expense ratio compared to the three-month period ended September 30, 2014 of 14.7% for the acquisition cost ratio and 11.6% for the other underwriting expense ratio. The increase in the other underwriting expense ratio are primarily related to the retroactive reinsurance expense as a result of favorable development on our Gateway runoff workers' compensation program, the amortization of software costs related to the company's new policy management system that went into production in the third quarter of 2015, and the timing of expenses versus the prior year quarter. As Scott mentioned, we also hired a number of people in the quarter in support of existing and continued growth. Overall, Atlas's combined ratio for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015 was 88.8%, compared to 89.6% for the three-month period ended September 30, 2014. Net underwriting income, which is the income produced prior to investment income, increased to $4.7 million from $2.7 million in the prior year period, representing a 75.4% increase. Atlas generated net investment income of $1.1 million for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015, as well as $360,000 of realized gains and other income. This resulted in a 2.1% annualized yield on our average invested asset portfolio for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015. Overall, net income attributable to Atlas was $4 million for the three-month period ended September 30, 2015. After the dilutive impact of the convertible preferred shares and stock options, earnings per diluted common share in the three-month period ended September 30, 2015 were 32 cents. This compares to the net income of $3.5 million and diluted common share earnings of 29 cents in the three-month period ended September 30, 2014. For the third quarter of 2015, the average return on average common equity was 21% on a pre-tax basis and 13.6% after tax. On slide 14, we provide more detail regarding operating income. This analysis should be helpful in understanding the business outside of a few atypical items we've noted on the past two quarters and in light of our tax treatment. This internal non-GAAP performance measure is used in the management of the company's operations. It represents operational results excluding, as applicable, net realized gains and losses, net impairment charges recognized in earnings, net tax adjustments, and other items. Operating income, which is a clear indicator of the overall incremental profitability growth of our organization, was $5.7 million, or 46 cents per diluted common share in the third quarter 2015, as compared to $3.4 million, or 28 cents per diluted common share in the same quarter last year. On slide 15, we detail the components of book value. We increased book value to $9.88 at September 30, 2015, from $9.08 at December 31, 2014, and $8.48 at September 30, 2014. Toward the bottom of the slide, we step through the key elements that impacted book value year to date. On slide 16, we include information on our balance sheet. Atlas's cash and invested assets at September 30, 2015 increased to $234.1 million compared to $180 million at December 31, 2014. The increase is primarily attributable to the addition of Global Liberty and our draw on our line of credit facility. Unearned premium balances, which represent premiums corresponding to the time periods remaining on the underlying in-force policies, were $108.1 million compared to $59 million. This increase is the result of continued organic growth plus the addition of Global Liberty. As noted earlier, during the first quarter, we established a credit facility with Fifth Third Bank, which allows us to draw up to $30 million at LIBOR plus 450 basis points for the use in connection with our statutory entities, plus another $5 million at LIBOR plus 275 basis points for other general corporate purposes. We have drawn $15.5 million from the $30 million credit facility and infused these funds into the ASI pool companies, which include American Country, American Service, and Gateway, in the form of surplus notes. We also drew $2 million from the $5 million facility to support the needs of the premium finance company we acquired in the Global Liberty transaction. As an investment philosophy, we continue to place priority on preservation of capital to support future premium growth. Our investment duration is 3.65 years and remains consistent with the expected liquidity needs and claim payout patterns. And the majority of our holdings are in fixed income securities rated AA or better by S&P. The high quality nature of our portfolio is detailed on slide 17. Because we intend to hold the securities to maturity, while any increases in interest rates could create an unrealized loss in the short term, we would not expect such losses to be realized. Working with our outside investment advisor, we monitor these positions in our portfolio closely, especially in light of recent world events. With that, let me turn the call back over to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks, Paul. Last quarter, we concluded with our thoughts on the pricing environment based on what we were seeing in our niche and the market overall. The updated industry data that we generally share from the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers wasn't available when we reported last quarter. However, we shared our opinion that commercial auto in general would probably move sideways for a few quarters, largely due to larger accounts putting pressure on generalist insurance companies despite their continued stated need for further rate increases. As shown on slide 19, this has in fact been the case, with a modest renewed increase in overall commercial auto rates in the third quarter. It's also worth noting that while most areas of commercial insurance are beginning to show softness, commercial auto is the only large segment of the P&C industry that's still attracting rate increases. As usual, small accounts are also performing better than large accounts from a rate standpoint as well. Our niche traditionally lags broader commercial auto by 12 to 18 months. We've been achieving high single-digit rate increases and gaining market share based on our increased marketing activities, coupled with larger carriers exiting our specific market in recent years. And given the status of P&C in general and the size of our niche market, we just haven't seen larger new market entrants come in that would disrupt pricing. While we do expect that growth in margins will inevitably be impacted by new entrants with naive capital, we have not yet seen signs of this occurring. These are trends, coupled with our own data, that lead us to believe that we can continue to write business below a 60% loss ratio with incremental rate increases in the mid to high single digits while growing in the 30 to 50% range to which we've previously guided. We're on track to reach the $200 to $240 million premium level for the full year 2015, and we'll provide perspective on our expectations for 2016 on next quarter's call. Going forward, we will remain vigilant with respect to capital planning and increasing our operating leverage in a responsible manner to fully benefit from market trends. We recognize the importance of reaching our efficiency goals in terms of expense levels and believe that we've made the right decisions to achieve them by investing wisely in our infrastructure this year. In addition, we continue to stay on top of the market shifts and expansion that has resulted from the increased number of vehicles being dispatched by transportation network companies such as Uber, Lyft, and Sidecar. We're also monitoring other tangential market opportunities such as last mile distribution of products to consumers. The changes occurring in our customers' market is currently benefiting Atlas from the perspective of market expansion and is also likely to create new potential horizontal markets that we may pursue over time. While still early in development, we've been proactive in devoting resources to examining these markets, which are evolving in our own backyard. Ensuring light vehicles that carry people and things that provide service for a fee is at the heart of our business model. We feel that Atlas is in an excellent position to take advantage as a hyper-focused commercial auto specialist. To conclude, we feel very comfortable with our previously discussed forecasts, both in terms of premium and high teens ROE, provided favorable market conditions persist, and encourage investors to focus on full year-over-year results to gauge trends and the meaningful progress we've achieved in our business. With that, let's turn it over for any questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Thank you. Our first question comes from the line of Jeremy Hellman with Singular Research. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Jeremy.
Good morning.
I have a couple questions on the transportation network companies and that, you know, longer-term opportunity. And just at first, you know, I think it would be helpful to have just a basic cementing of my understanding in terms of if I, as an individual, went and signed up with Uber, for example, to be a driver, do I need to carry some sort of supplemental insurance over the top of what I might have as just a private individual? And then secondly, more broadly, do you expect customer acquisition costs in that space to deviate markedly from your traditional markets?
So addressing the first part of your question, in a nutshell, it depends on the type of service you're going to provide for the transportation network company and also the geographic location in which you're going to drive. So all basic personal auto policies exclude commercial use. So that would include driving for a PNC company, delivering pizzas, or you know, operating as a plumber's van, for example. So to the extent that an individual is using a vehicle for commercial purposes, they do need to have some sort of commercial insurance. Now, in terms of the requirements for the TNC companies, there are certain classes of service, such as Uber Black and Uber SUV, that actually require that the drivers purchase commercial insurance and demonstrate that they have that coverage in force to the TNC company before they can qualify to provide that type of service. There are other aspects of TNC operators, you know, what are traditionally called ride sharing, where the TNC company may not require that, but a local regulator might. So, for example, in the New York market, which is the largest market for what we do, the New York Taxi Limo Commission mandates that all drivers driving for a TNC company in any respect have to evidence that they are carrying true commercial auto insurance. There are other jurisdictions that haven't quite come along that far in terms of regulation and so may not actually be requiring that. So most of the TNC companies do have an excess policy in place that may provide some limited coverage, but I think, you know, what we are expecting over time is that at least most major metro areas will ultimately require that all drivers who are driving people around for a fee do actually purchase true commercial auto insurance. So because of that, in the short term, we've seen some benefit in those markets where coverage is required. In the longer term, we think that we're going to see potential opportunities down the road. So in terms of the second part of your question, acquisition costs, today we are continuing to distribute only through specialty independent retail agents. Our traditional target market were owner-operators and small fleets, so we think that our current distribution channel is well-positioned to distribute not only to the traditional commercial auto operators, but also to sort of this emerging class of operators in the transportation, you know, the personal or people transportation field. As we see future evolutions, you know, sort of last mile distribution of products, for example, you know, obviously we will start with our existing distribution channel to determine whether they feel they have good access to those types of opportunities. But then we also may look at augmenting that if, for example, you know, going after those target clients is not consistent with the goals of our current agents. But I wouldn't expect a significant increase in our acquisition costs. But, you know, over time, we may ultimately expand our distribution channel if our product focus expands beyond the movement of people around.
Okay, thanks. That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the question, Jeremy.
Our next question comes from the line of Dan Farrell with Piper Jaffray. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, and good morning.
Morning.
I was wondering, Scott, I was wondering if you could expand a little bit on your comments on just your thought process around horizontal expansion and how you think about potential products you might do. And it seems like a longer-term sort of timing for that. Is there a threshold you want to get to in your core business now before you would do that? Thank you.
Sure. Great question. You know, as you know, we've always talked about potential horizontal expansion as part of our strategy. Specifically thinking about expanding into other specialty commercial auto segments in a softer market environment with the idea that the best and highest use of our capital and resources in a favorable market like we're seeing today is getting to that 20% proportionate market share in our current niche market. So that remains our highest priority. You know, as I mentioned on the call, you know, we've got about a 10% nationwide market share within our current niche. We think we can grow that to about 20%. So there's certainly a lot of potential opportunity there. That said, you know, we are spending time evaluating other potential specialty commercial auto segments that exist today as logical horizontal expansion markets that we will pursue in earnest when we do ultimately see the insurance market, or at least the market in our niche, shifting. And between now and then, we'll be opportunistic if a situation comes up that we think is really a true scenario where we can deploy our capabilities in terms of sort of finding, diligencing, and fixing challenged insurance businesses in a way to get very attractive valuations by a company that at its core could support logical horizontal expansion into other specialty commercial auto fields. Augmenting that or adding to that is now this evolution of sort of the TNC type distribution model or deployment model, both within the current niche we focus on and potentially other niche markets. So, you know, as that evolves, we're obviously going to be keeping a close eye on it. It's kind of growing up in our backyard. So we would like to take advantage and leverage the data and information and expertise we have to be a first mover, provided that we determine that we can be a first mover and generate premiums that will deliver an underwriting profit. So to be clear, you know, we aren't going to chase new opportunities simply to put premium on the books or simply because they exist. You know, sometimes the best thing you can do in insurance is make sure you're the first person to understand the risk, but then let somebody else underprice it for a little while until the market is disciplined enough to accept the appropriate rate for the right type of coverage and service. So, you know, I don't want to suggest that next quarter you're going to see us writing a significant amount of premium in some expansion area, but I do think it's important to understand that we are going to be very focused on making sure we're well prepared so that as those opportunities come up, we can pursue them. But, you know, again, I think the best and highest use of our time and energy right now is continuing to capture market share in our current niche market and make sure that we continue to be the nationwide market leader in that respect.
That was helpful. Thanks. And then just one other question. You've talked about your expectation that you'll continue to move towards closer to a 2-to-1 premium to stat surplus over time. Do you think organic opportunities will get you all the way there, or do you think it's going to be a combination of the organic opportunities plus opportunistic M&A, book rolls, et cetera?
I think organic opportunity will get us there over the next year or so. You know, the quote-unquote good problem that we have right now is the fact that our surplus is growing through retained earnings at about the same percentage as our premium. So that's causing operating leverage to be maintained in a relatively flat way. Obviously, you know, we want to maximize retained earnings. So from that perspective, it's sort of a good problem to have. But if we continue to grow at the rates that we're currently seeing and expecting and continue to modestly expand margin, holding all of our other capital planning tools constant, the quota share and the debt facility, we do think that operating leverage is going to move up in 2016. But as I mentioned, you know, the concluding part of the formal remarks, you know, we will provide more specific guidance in the next quarter's call. And can give everybody more clarity in terms of expected operating leverage on that call as well.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the question.
Our next question comes from the line of Samir Kher with Capital Returns Management. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, Samir. How are you?
Thanks, Samir.
Good, thanks. You touched on this some already, but can you elaborate on the pricing you guys are seeing in your core organic book and how that varies by geography?
Sure. So, you know, as we've confirmed before, we are pricing to below a 60% loss ratio in every jurisdiction where we're writing. That equates to high single-digit rate increases in most cases. You know, as we've said before, too, it is not our intention to provide more granularity on what we're doing in particular areas for competitive purposes. But what I can say is that we are continuing to see opportunities to grow with those kind of rate increases, both in terms of new and renewal business. You know, obviously, we want to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, we want to retain profitable, good accounts over time. But we think that we'll continue to see the kind of opportunities we've seen over the last 12 months in the next 12 months barring some new dramatic change in terms of the competitive environment. You know, we did have a team of people at the TLTA conference last week, which is the large industry conference of our customers. And what they heard was very consistent with the kinds of things we've been communicating in terms of, you know, real increased demand for specialty insurance, value being placed on the types of things that we do, particularly from a claims standpoint, and, you know, no real signs of any significant disruptive new entrants. So we do think it's going to be a favorable market going forward. You know, and again, for competitive reasons, we really don't want to drill down into exactly what we're doing in specific geographies.
Okay, that's fair. Maybe you could feel this one. I'm not sure if it's fair game then, but the CIAB data seems to be bouncing around for the last few quarters. Does your experience does it mirror that? And is your outlook for pricing, is that accelerating in light of many in the industry taking pain in commercial auto?
Right. So I think the short answer is yes, and I'd like to explain why. So broader commercial auto, which, you know, the CIAB data you reference is the broader $27 billion overall commercial auto segment, and, you know, it has kind of bumped around. We think it will continue to do so for a little while. You know, a lot of the large generalist commercial auto writers in the last couple of quarters have had some severity challenges related to older accident years, particularly 2009, 10, and 11. And so for those reasons, you know, we're seeing those companies want to increase their rates generally. How that helps us specifically is really in two areas. The first, to the extent we have local, less sophisticated competitors who are relying solely on industry rate levels, like those published or recommended by ISO, as the commercial auto industry generally raises rates, those types of competitors will generally follow. And so sort of the quote-unquote more naive rate levels are going up, which creates broader buoyancy. The second thing it does is typically the thing that will really disrupt our market is going to be third-party intermediaries like managing general agents getting access to an insurance company's paper. Typically, the type of companies that will support those intermediary distribution channels only begin to do so when they are actually generating a desired return in the larger segments that they focus on consistently across market cycles. So to the extent that the larger generalists are still trying to figure it out, they are less likely to jump into our niche and support these distribution channels that will tend to be price aggressive. So, you know, we regard both of those things as positives. And then obviously we're relying solely on our own data and our understanding of the niche market to make sure that we are fully taking advantage of the environment and appropriately pricing to the specialty segment on which we focus.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for the question.
Our next question comes from the line of Ryan Burns with Janney Montgomery Scott. Please proceed with your question.
Great. Thanks. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ryan.
Just had a question on claims frequency. Obviously, on the the personal auto side, there's been some issues there. Obviously, their drivers have been on the road more often, and obviously your drivers are on the road plenty. But just want to see if the increased congestion on the roads is creating any sort of frequency issue in the in your markets as well.
Sure. No, it's a great question, and it's something that we're paying very close attention to. And have been for a number of quarters. You know, in general, the larger personal auto carriers who have been articulating concerns about frequency have sort of attributed it to two main areas. One, distracted driving, and the second, lower gas prices causing individuals to drive their cars more. So in our particular niche, our drivers have always been relatively distracted just because of the nature of what they do. You know, they're looking for passengers, they're paying attention to navigation systems, they're interacting with dispatch bases, et cetera. So, you know, we have already built the expectation for some amount of distracted driver frequency into our modeling over the years. And so I don't think in terms of accidents caused by our insureds, we're going to see as much difference there. In fact, you know, so far we haven't really seen any. In fact, most of our clients are really strong advocates of minimizing distracted driving and making sure drivers aren't texting while they're driving or doing the sorts of things that a lot of individuals in private passenger autos might be doing, and hopefully, you know, curtailing over time here. But so that's the first piece. The second, you know, our customers think of their vehicles as an asset that they want to fully utilize. And so traditionally and today, you know, our customers are going to have those vehicles on the road as much as they can to clear whatever demand there is for rides. And so the price of gas doesn't really cause our customers to drive more or less. It will affect their profit margin, but it isn't necessarily going to increase utilization of the vehicle. So, you know, again, in that area, I don't think we're seeing as much of an impact as personal auto insurers are. But, you know, the third potential issue is if other people are on the road more, you know, those are more people to crash into or be crashed into by. And so that is the area that we are really keeping a close eye on, to make sure that if frequency is just up on a macro level, you know, is there going to be any pressure on our figures? So, you know, we really have not seen it, but it is something, as I said, that we're keeping a close eye on.
Great. Appreciate the color. Thanks, guys.
Great question.
Thanks, Ryan.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Paul Newsom with Sandler O'Neill. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. I was hoping you
morning,
could
Paul.
Do a little bit more to quantify what appears to be some elevated expense levels in the third quarter, perhaps to give us sort of a run rate of what you think the expense ratio is roughly speaking at the moment if you take out some of those timing issues, et cetera.
Sure. No, I appreciate the question. So in the quarter, obviously, we did have some elevated expenses. You know, we referenced the fact that part of it was attributed to our rolling out a new policy management system, which includes a point-of-sale interface for our agents. So there were, you know, IT and banking fees that were increased because of that. You know, we did transition our bank account as part of rolling onto the new system. And so we're maintaining two platforms in the third quarter. Starting with the fourth quarter, we'll only have a single platform. And then unrelated to that, we had some boards and bureaus and other regulatory costs, et cetera, that, you know, are just timing issues where those costs will ultimately be divided across our full year's earned premium. So all in, the impact of those expenses were about 1.3% of the other underwriting expense ratio in the quarter. If we refer to slide 6 of the deck that we provided in conjunction with this call, I think the best thing to think about is our year-to-date run rate at this point, which as at September 30th was more like 26.9%, so very close to the 26.5%. Percent high end of the 24.5% to 26.5% range we've given. So we do expect on a full year basis that we will continue to see underwriting expenses trending to that 26% range or better. And then I would reiterate the comment we've made before, which is that as we continue to see opportunities to grow in that 30 to 50% range, we will be at the high end of that target. So, you know, while it is our expectation that on an annual basis we should be able to be at the 26.5% target range, we will be on the high end of that range as long as we continue to see opportunities to grow at expanded margins. And that really just stems from the fact that it is more expensive to generate new business than it is to generate renewal business. And we obviously want to make sure we're continuing to deliver a strong value proposition, both in terms of claims as well as the other things that we do, because that is what allows us to charge, you know, incrementally higher rates relative to a generalist. So I would say, you know, I'd refer people to the annualized number to give a better sense of where we really are today, so that 26.9% before debt treatment and equity incentive costs, with the expectation that we're going to drive that down to the 26.5% top end of the range in the short term, and then obviously over time we want to see it go down even further.
Excellent. I have a very quick modeling question. Outlook for the non-controlling interest, what would that be?
So that is a vehicle that allowed us to make a non-public commercial real estate investment. The overall invested assets by year end this year are going to be less than 1%. So we did have to break it out because our percent ownership in that LLC is more than 50%, but the actual impact on earnings per share will be less than a penny. So it'll be de minimis from a modeling standpoint in the near term.
Great. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for the questions.
Our next question is a follow-up question from Samir Kher with Capital Returns. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I apologize if you covered this already, but any plans to change the ceding level of the quota share one way or another in coming quarters? And my other question is, what are your plans to pay down the note?
So we do not have any intention to change the ceding levels in the fourth quarter. To the extent that we reevaluate that for 2016, we would articulate any expected changes on our next quarterly call. So we do want to be in a habit of articulating any expected changes in advance of those being seen in the financials. But for the time being, we don't expect a change there in the fourth quarter. And then we also are not planning on drawing on the note in the fourth quarter any further as well. So I think for modeling purposes, you can assume that those two capital planning tools, you know, the use of those will remain constant relative to the third quarter.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the question.
Mr. Wolny, we have no further questions at this time. I would now like to turn the floor back over to you for closing comments.
Thanks, Christine. Before we wrap up, we would like to acknowledge that tomorrow is Veterans Day and thank all of those who serve and have served our country. We also appreciate everybody on the call joining us today and look forward to speaking with each of you again in the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.